This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the show where we take an in-depth second look at last week's stories. I'm Jaden Cohn.
And I'm Joey Delahunty. Today, we will be discussing the upcoming 1% sales tax, the April mayoral election, and the recent ISU Board of Trustees meeting. McLean County residents will soon decide if they want to apply a new 1% sales tax to fund local schools. A tax like this exists in several counties adjacent to McLean, but it's still stirring up controversy as it appears on the ballot this year. Bella Morello from the News Team sat down with School Board President Elizabeth Fox Anvik to learn more.
Can you just give a little bit of what the why is behind proposing this sales tax for the April 1st ballot?
The money that is generated from the 1% sales tax would be able to fund maintenance and facilities within McLean County. It would allow additional monies for safety and security, and then also for mental health resources. And so a lot of the rural schools, they don't have school resource officers in their buildings because they can't afford it. So if the 1% sales tax were to pass, schools could use that money to pay for resource officers or upgrading their door system for even greater security. And then also mental health, because we know our kiddos today really struggle with mental health. And so more resources could be used in the schools to accommodate the mental health needs of all students. And then, you know, all buildings need maintenance and to maintain the longevity of the building, new roofs, new heating and cooling systems, you know, because we want our buildings to be obviously safe and comfortable for learning environments. At our board meeting on Wednesday, the District 87 School Board committed to giving back to the taxpayers a third of what we take in. It would equate to about a $330 savings on the tax bill for a house that's appraised at around $250,000. So any relief is good relief, I think. Unit 5 passed a similar resolution on Wednesday as well, that if the sales tax passes, we're committed to providing relief to property tax. It's important, right? Because house values are rising, because that's what your property taxes are based on, is the assessed value of your home. Property taxes continue to rise because the assessed value of our homes continue to rise, which is a good thing because that means you're living in a growing
Yeah, definitely. And kind of going to the backstory behind this, was there any specific event that kind of sparked the need for this tax increase? Has it been in the works for a while now?
It has been on the ballot in past years. It predates my time on the board, and I came onto the board in 2017. But counties surrounding McLean County all have it. So we're actually one of the few counties in the state of Illinois that doesn't actually have it. So if you were to go shopping in, say, Peoria or Champaign or Springfield, you're actually paying the tax for their school districts.
Can you talk a little bit about, like, maybe the short-term and long-term benefits that this would mean for the Bloomington Normal community?
So, you know, definitely the school resource officer piece, right? You know, for the smaller towns, you know, like the Leroys and the Tri-Valleys and the Hayworths. I don't know what their circumstances are, but I'm assuming they probably, you know, if they need school resource officers or would like a school resource officer, this money could be used for that. I know District 87 and Unit 5 currently have resource officers in our schools, but it would also, you know, allow for fixing roofs or, in District 87's case, remodeling an outdated classroom that could be brought up. There's nothing physically wrong with it, but maybe a little modernization would help a more vivid learning environment. So have work that's going on across the district always to maintain our buildings, because that's one of the things that District 87 is very proud of, is the fact that we take very good care of our buildings. So this just helps us extend the life of those buildings which then means that we don't have to raise taxes to build new buildings. So, and as long as we can take care of what we have, that being prudent to our taxpayers and being prudent with their money. And mental health, you know, like a mental health aspect of kiddos today is very critical. We have way more need than we have the ability to offer solutions. And so anytime that you can provide relief to kiddos, you know, we're seeing more mental health needs at the elementary levels.
Yeah. Can you think of any potential cons to implementing the tax?
Well, anytime you spend a dollar, you're now going to be spending an extra penny. But I think District 87 has shown we're very prudent with our taxpayers' money and that we could actually make that 1 cent go further than the 1 cent buying power that it would offer. That would be the big con, is that the perception that more money is being spent by taxpayers. If it's not taxed by the state of Illinois today, this 1 cent sales tax will not be added to it. So like groceries, for instance, you know, you're not going to pay an additional tax for groceries because groceries in the state of Illinois are not taxed today.
Okay. Yeah, just to clarify that part, the 1% tax, you said that it wouldn't apply to groceries?
Correct. So if no sales tax is collected on an item in the state of Illinois today, it's not part of the 1%.
Yeah, and then is there anything else you would like to say to kind of encourage others to vote yes on this tax?
I just think that education is the foundation of our future. Anytime that we can do better for our kiddos, I think that just means education, our future will be better. You know, anytime you invest in education, you're investing in your future because, you know, education is the bedrock for creating the next generation.
As Anvik said, this tax, like others in Illinois, wouldn't be applied to groceries or medicine if it ends up passing.
With the April mayor elections right around the corner, the WZND News team will be talking to local candidates about why they are running for the position. This week, WZND's Caitlin Wittes talked with Councilmember Chamberlain Harris from the Normaltown Council. Harris discussed issues with the local community and some common goals she had for the upcoming election.
So my first question is, how long have you been a member of the Normaltown Council?
I've been a member of the town council for 7 years and 10 months.
All right. And what are some things that you've accomplished on the council?
So being on the council, outside of just making votes that have been impactful, I got a chance, one of my very first votes was on the incentive plan we provided to Rivian. I've made some votes for the underpass and moving that project forward. I supported 24-hour notification. However, we did get past only 12 hours. So those were some of the vote things that I've done. But outside of that, I had helped to start Youth on a Mission, which was a youth council teaching high school students about municipal government and how it works and how they can advocate for their communities, even as a high school student. I brought the first racial equity summit to the town of Normal. It was the first of its kind for the state of Illinois. I also helped the town of Normal. We worked with a company called CGI to provide marketing videos that now EDC does for us, but at the time EDC did not do those for us, so I got CGI here to do those for us. Also did the Summer of Love. It was a community engagement event where community members were able to share their stories of why they love Normal. We did some social media around that whole event as well. So those are a few things outside of just what I've done on council. Also, from a National League of Cities perspective, I also helped to change how we talk about housing. And instead of just calling it affordable housing, even if you go out there and look at how the National League of Cities refer to housing, they talk about it from the perspective of what I like to personally call AID housing, ADE, which is attainable, diverse, and equitable housing.
How have things changed throughout your time on the town council?
Well, a lot of what has changed is because of the environment. And what I mean, like everything that's happened, COVID happened. What we saw was a shift in how we all related to one another, how businesses conducted themselves, even how we provided services to our residents. COVID required us to make a big shift. You'll see a lot of contactless efforts that took place. You saw a lot of digital things going forward. COVID was probably one of the first shifts we began to, that we saw major shifts, I should say. I think we're starting to see another shift take place as we are certainly forced for a number of reasons. Some of it, I won't say some of it, but a lot of it is, you know, a national crisis when it comes to housing, but also with the increase of the need for people who are moving here for Rivian to have housing, it's also having an impact. And with that type of issue, it's a trickle down. The needs of what our community may have are shifting. We're seeing more diversity. When I speak of diversity in our community, we're seeing people of varying social economic backgrounds, educational backgrounds change. We're going from where it was once a more family viewed sophomore families. You're seeing a mix of families and single people. So there's so much diversity that has come to our community, even more so with ISU. It was always looked different because students come and go, but it's different when there's an industry being built here where people are coming and making a life here. So we're definitely seeing the impacts of that in a variety of ways.
Now, looking forward, what inspired you to run for mayor?
Looking forward, one of my biggest inspirations for running is, you know, what is our vision for the future? And so for me, there's so much running through my mind of where we can go, not just where we are. I just felt like we don't have a vision forward. We don't have a vision that we're reaching for the next 20 years to say, this is how we want to look and how we want to operate. Now, granted, yes, we have strategic plans, but where is that leadership vision that really pushes the envelope? And I think I saw a lot of, or felt like it wasn't there in a couple of scenarios. One of was with Youth on a Mission. There was no support to think about how we engage our youth who could possibly one day take our place. Now, I'll be honest, I don't look to be here forever. So I'm definitely for engaging the next generation to say, hey, you can be here too, and here's some ways to get in or get interested into the things that we do. I also noticed there was no vision forward about a variety of other things, but oftentimes I was met with this phrase, you're not the mayor. And so it spawned something in me to say, okay, then I guess I have to work for something just so that I can have my voice heard on these issues or my vision for our community to move forward.
All right. And building off of that, what are some of your goals or plans if you're elected?
Well, I always talk about the six things that are very important to me. Number one is technology. I want us to definitely have more of a focus on technology. I know just from my own background, the more technology we can bring in, the better efficiency we can provide in our services, as well as over time become a cost savings to us as we provide those services to our residents. Housing, we have to definitely do things in the housing space. Now, what I want us to do is I don't want us to fall into the political game to check box housing and put a Band-Aid. I want us to be strategic and very thoughtful because we have to think about not just answering the cry of today, but what does that look like for us 20 years from now? I don't want us to do what was done at one point where they built all these single family homes. And what the problem is in the town of Normal is we are overbuilt with single family homes and we don't have enough diversified housing. And so I want us to be mindful of things like that before we just start going to build and making a decision without strategically thinking through this. I want us to reimagine cultural diversity. I talked about it a little bit in the other question. We are becoming a diverse community. Again, it's not solely based on race. We're talking about age. We're talking about gender. We're talking about socioeconomics. We're talking about education. We're talking about abilities. You know, we're talking about all these things that sometimes those things that make us diverse and different. And because of those diversities and differences, it makes our community as a whole better. So I want us to reimagine cultural diversity, intentional community engagement, actually. It's next on my list. I feel like we lack in that space. We do not engage the community, whether it's our residents, whether it's the city of Bloomington, who's a sister city. We don't engage in a way that is intentional. And how do we know that? Because there's a perception that there's no engagement with the community. And so in order for that to not be so, we have to be intentional. We want people to feel like they have a voice. Now, we may not always agree, but I want people to walk away from every situation feeling valued, feeling heard, and feeling respected.
The next episode will be discussing Kathleen Lorenz from Normal Town Council in her interview with WZND's Courtney Conroy. We are going to take a quick break here on WZND Second Look, but we've got some great stories you don't want to miss. Don't go anywhere.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it so far, we've talked about a possible new county sales tax and the upcoming normal mayoral election.
ISU Board of Trustees met this past Friday to discuss a number of issues facing the university and the wider community, as well as the public comment from the attendees. Val Garay from the WZND News team talked to Media Relations Director Chris Copeland to get a better idea of the meeting.
So the board approved increase the cost of housing for the next academic year. Do you happen to know if the board has discussed any updates or kind of plans surrounding the current housing crisis going on in Bloomington Normal?
That was not part of the discussion for Friday's board meeting.
Gotcha. Okay. Do you happen to know what the university is currently doing to prevent a faculty strike?
Well, a collective bargaining with an independent federal mediator is currently underway with University Professionals of Illinois and the United Faculty of ISU. It's a union that represents approximately 650 tenured and tenure track faculty at Illinois State. So the university remains committed to continued good faith negotiations and hopes to reach a contract agreement outside of that. We have a website that can update your audience on the status of those negotiations and the mediation sessions that are in flight, one being coming up on Friday. But outside of that, I can't comment on the status of negotiations.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have any insight into how a possible strike, obviously the university is still negotiating with the union, how would a strike impact students' ability to, you know, go to their classes? Or if there would be a direct impact, how would that?
I think with contract negotiations continuing through the federal mediator, it's too early I think that's preemptive to discuss. And so both parties continue to show up and work through negotiations, and we look forward to the outcome of that.
Moving towards another public comment that was made, a student discussed kind of the worry that a lot of students have right now that communication, especially through emails, is not as efficient. Is the university working on a way to improve on giving better and more transparent communication with its students regarding difficult topics like the ones discussed in the board meeting, like the ICE policies going on right now?
Well, we have a very large campus, and so we have a lot of communication channels that we utilize to communicate with our student body, and we are working towards additional events. There's the ISU in Conversation series happening with our Office of Equity and Inclusion, and they continue to host those events throughout the semester, and I think that's one of the topics that have been covered and will continue to be covered throughout the semester.
If you can provide any sort of reassurance to students with the ongoing, just different topics that were discussed during public comments, the faculty negotiation. I know some students from Justice for Palestine also were speaking. So if you could just provide any kind of reassurance to students at ISU.
Yeah, the public comment period is available at every Board of Trustees meeting and is 30 minutes of time blocked to hear from the constituents of the board, and so they always listen and take those comments seriously, and it's a way to engage with the Board of Trustees and administration at those meetings.
All Board of Trustees meetings can be found on the President Office YouTube channel.
One man has been hospitalized in Normal after a shooting early this morning. Police say they were responding to calls reporting gunshots around 3 a.m. this morning southeast of Uptown Normal. When they arrived, they found the victim and transported him to the hospital. The incident is still under police investigation.
Members of ISU Faculty Union were protesting on the quad this week in response to a standstill in negotiations. The union, which formed only last year, reports tenure and tenure-track facility at Illinois State and is currently trying to negotiate a new contract. They recently lodged a formal complaint with the federal government that the university is not negotiating in good faith.
On Tuesday, Bloomington police shot and killed 15-year-old Cole Turner in an incident that little information has been released about. Police say they were responding to a report of an armed subject on Fairmont Drive, and at some point after their arrival, at least one officer shot and killed Turner. As is common when police use deadly force, Illinois State Police have been called in to conduct an investigation of the events.
The City Council is planning a redevelopment plan for downtown Bloomington. The plan will see several abandoned buildings demolished and replaced with new parking lots, and one building is donated for the city's future housing development. The plan hopes to bring new people and businesses to the area.
It was a busy week for ISU sports. The women's basketball team fell to their I-74 rivals, the Bradley Braves, 70-65 last Sunday. Shannon Dowell recorded a double-double with 19 points and 13 rebounds, and Addison Martin finished with 15 points and 9 rebounds. The Redbirds carried momentum into yesterday's 90-68 win over Valparaiso. In honor of Senior Day, the team honored Maya Wong, Elsie Cudd-Nudson, Lauren Cohen, and Caroline Waite before the game. Knudsen ended the regular season on a high note, scoring 24 points and draining 6 three-pointers. The team travels to Springfield, Missouri for a rematch with the Missouri State Bears on Thursday at 6:30 p.m.
The men's basketball team fell to Southern Illinois on Tuesday, 88-79. Dalton Banks' effort was not enough against his former team, leading the Redbirds with 18 points and 3 steals. The sophomore duo of Johnny Kinzinger and Chase Walker had an off night, combining for 23 points and 13 rebounds. The Redbirds will be back in action today against Evansville Purple Aces at 2 p.m. After the game, the team will honor Dalton Banks, Jordan Davis, Caden Bozer, and Malachi Poindexter in their departure from the Nest. The softball team went 1-3 in their trip to the Middle Tennessee State Classic Challenge. On Friday, the Redbirds suffered a 2-1 loss to Middle Tennessee to open the tournament. The Redbirds stepped on the driver's seat in the second game against Ball State, claiming a 3-0 win. However, momentum slipped away from the Redbirds, and they suffered a 6-3 loss to Middle Tennessee and a 10-1 loss to Ball State on Saturday.
The baseball team picked up its first win of the season in a crushing 11-1 victory over Ball State on Tuesday. The Redbirds are currently tied at a game apiece in the three-game series with Lindenwood. The Lions took the first game of the series 8-5, and the Redbirds responded with an 8-6 win in Game 2. The series will be determined later today at 1 p.m.
On Friday, the gymnastics team won their home quad meet against Central Michigan, Bowling Green, and Centauri University. The Redbirds finished with a final score of 195.725.
The swimming and diving team competed in the Missouri Valley Conference Championships this past weekend. Mia Snow brought home a silver medal after breaking the score record in the 100-meter fly. Eva Reyes took the third place in the 3-meter diving to advance in the championship.
In other MVC championship action, the track and field team head to the Windy City to compete in their last meet of the season today and tomorrow.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we talked about the potential county sales tax, the upcoming mayoral election, the recent Board of Trustees meeting, and the many developments in Redbird sports. For Second Look, I'm Joey Delahunty.
And I'm Jaden Cohn, and you can listen to this episode or any of our previous ones on WZND.com under the podcast tab. Make sure you tune in next week for more in-depth reporting on Bloomington Normal.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com. www.cleveland.com.